Hello and welcome to the Fortune and Freedom podcast, where Nigel Farage and Nikolai Hubble give you a unique take on what's really going on in the world of finance, investing, and politics. We hope you sit back and enjoy this episode.
Over the last few weeks, the energy transition has begun to fail in a very particular way. There are now credible warnings about electricity shortages. That's because we've managed to phase out the reliable baseload power of fossil fuels, and we're trying to replace it with renewable energy, but it's not yet ready and not in a reliable way. Nigel Farage, are you getting worried about blackouts?
Yeah, it started in about 2001, in my case, for 20 years. I just thought this is madness. I mean, if you rely on wind or the sun, it is by definition intermittent energy. Now, when I first raised these concerns all that time back, I said, don't worry. No problem. We're going to solve the battery storage problem. Would you know what? Quarter of a century on, we are no closer to doing so. And that's the only way. That is the only way this could ever work. But I think you'd probably need a battery pack the size of Kent to store the kind of energy that you need when a big, foggy anticyclone sits over the United Kingdom in February when temperatures are at their lowest and when demand for electricity and heating is at its highest. So, no, we're no closer to any of those solutions. Other ideas that have been mooted is that we could use wind energy when we have excess wind to convert hydrogen. But again, you know, problems with the density of hydrogen, the impracticality of using it in many, many settings, A, because of density, B, because of its explosive qualities, means we're no closer to that either. Now, you know, there may be a magic solution, but we haven't found one in the last 25 years, and I'm not optimistic we'll find one within the next 10. And therefore, what we're doing is we are committing an act of lunacy. I just come out from Texas. I mean, Texas, which on its own would be the biggest economy in the world. It's a big old place, Texas, and people are fleeing California and moving to, well, look, the sun always shines in Texas. I mean, what's the problem? Let's go for solar in a big way. And blow me down, in Texas didn't have a series of recurring blackouts last year. And you think about it, you know, even this conversation we're having, every time we pick up and use one of these, we are more dependent upon electricity today than we've ever been at any point in the history of mankind. I mean, if the lights go out, literally all trade of all kinds just ceases. So we have to have reliable power. Our politicians, having given up God, have gone for climate change, and therefore net zero is they believe their solution. But here's the thing, it's not working. I mean, you know, Boris Johnson told us that after 2030, there will be no more petrol or diesel cars, new ones sold in the United Kingdom. And that was, of course, total nonsense. Boris is good at nonsense. That then slipped to 2035. And then this morning, we've got Sir Jim Ratcliffe, you know, Britain's premier industrialist, saying 2035 is nonsense as well. You know, people are just not buying EVs in the way that was expected. Similarly, in Scotland, you know, we've seen the fall of the First Minister, the breakdown of the coalition with the Scottish Greens, because the 2030 net zero target was completely impossible and has slipped. So what you've got here is a political class that haven't given up on the ideology, but the practicalities of this are getting in the way. And I think that the demand that the public have for reliable energy, and not to say cheap energy, means that gas has got a great future, whatever. You know, 19-year-old upper middle class girls called Jocasta, who tie themselves to gantries over the M25 in Surrey, may tell you.
That's really a paradox there of trying to make everything reliant on electricity instead of fossil fuels, and then trying to make the electricity system rely on an intermittent base, you know, of power. So we've spoken about that before, though. What I want to ask you about is more the political realization about what's going on. Will it take a blackout or a series of blackouts for people to start realizing just how big this issue is and for politics to actually shift dramatically, a bit like it did in the 70s when we had the three-day work week and all those energy crises? Or have we already reached that point? And is the ship already starting to turn?
We haven't reached that point, but there is a big turn in public opinion against the whole environmental agenda. And I think the farmers' protests, I mean, it's slightly different to our conversation, but it's the same theme. The farmers' protests across Europe are very much a part of that. And you're going to see in June some European elections with a lot more skeptical voices going into the European Parliament. In our country, public opinion is fascinating. Do you support net zero policies? Yes. Do you want to pay for net zero policies? No. And that's kind of how it stitches in this country. So we're actually beginning to see Keir Starmer backtracking a bit on some of the pledges that he made, the government beginning to backtrack a little bit. As I say, they're not giving up their ambitions, but they're just kicking the can down the road because they realize that actually none of this stuff actually works, and it is dangerous. So yes, maybe it needs something more dramatic to get a real turnaround in policy. Of course, the real answer to baseload, reliable baseload 24/7, 365 days a year is nuclear. But, you know, it takes 10 to 15 years to get a nuclear plant up and running. And whilst we're all in favor, you know, of the small modular reactors, we still need to see a bit more evidence around the world of how they work in practical terms. So look, I think the public are beginning to wake up to this, but yes, a couple of big blackouts and I think everything will change.
Well, let's continue that. But what happens if we do get a series of blackouts, say here in the UK, or if it happens somewhere else, like in Germany, or you mentioned Texas earlier? What happens to the political situation in the UK? I mean, presumably the parties that have been skeptical about all this from the beginning would benefit significantly, but...
Oh, yes.
Take us through that scenario.
But I mean, there aren't many of them, you know. I mean, reform in the UK, which is probably at about 12-13% nationally, reform has been saying for some time that net zero is wholly unrealistic. And whilst we want to do our best, you know, environmentally to do what we can, we have to be practical. And when you look at the fact that, you know, China has produced more CO2 since 2014 than we have in the entire existence of our country, including the Industrial Revolution, you begin to get some sense of perspective. So, yeah, I mean, at the moment in this country, reform would be the only beneficiary. What the Tories are now doing as the next election looms is they're saying to the farming community, oh, we don't like all these solar farms everywhere. But of course, you know, it's them that's been pushing net zero. It's them that's overseen deindustrialization, the closure of this country as a primary steelmaker, perhaps being one of the best examples. So they're all caught in an absolute terrible pickle over this. Whatever they try to do now to backtrack contradicts the words they'd be giving us just a few years ago. And it's a remarkable thing that Theresa May's net zero legislation went through the Commons in 2017 without a vote. Can you believe it? One of the most expensive, costly pieces of legislation with the fact that possibly the most expensive in modern times, and there wasn't even a vote. So they're all very complicit in this.
You mentioned that this is a global problem, this climate change issue, and that really is the pickle that they're in. They can't unravel net zero policies without admitting that actually the world doesn't face this climate change crisis from carbon emissions. How are they going to wriggle their way out of that?
I've no idea. I really don't know. I mean, rather like they do with everything, pretending the past didn't happen, and it's what you say today that matters, and assuming that everyone's got a very short memory, which of course they haven't. This, of course, in America will be a very, very, very major issue. Trump is putting energy, I would say it's his third most important policy. Number one's the border, American production of oil and gas to get domestic prices down. And they did this with oil is a global market with a daily fixed price, right? But gas is not in the same way. And so you had a situation during Trump's presidency where gas prices in America were 50% less than gas prices in the UK. So this is all linked together. Whereas obviously Biden, through the Inflation Reduction Act, has spent eye-watering sums of money subsidizing renewable schemes. So, you know, as with many things in life, maybe it's America that decides this year and shows us what the way forward is.
If we're going to look at the financial implications of all this, the investment opportunity is fairly obviously gas, because gas is sort of proposed as the backup power source for renewable energy Therefore, if renewables are going to under-deliver in terms of what we need, that implies there's going to be a huge amount of demand for gas as power stations that were intended for just backup suddenly became the base load power of many different countries, not the UK. So are you looking at opportunities there in terms of investments?
Yeah. I mean, once again, it is ESG nil point. I think it's, yeah. And of course, as you know, energy stocks have done really very well over the course of the last few years, certainly outperformed ESG investments. No sign of that changing. And even for those that are obsessed with carbon dioxide emissions, gas, of course, is infinitely preferable to burning oil, diesel generators, or coal. So, yeah, gas is the practical way forward. And do you know what, Nick? We could have this conversation in 2050, and we will still be using substantial amounts of gas. Of that, I have no doubt at all.
Where will the gas be coming from, though? That's the big question.
Well, that's a good question.
That's
a very good question. For America, and of course, they have been exporting huge amounts of LNG, to us and to Europe over the course of the last few years. It's been the only way that Germany in particular and France and Italy could get themselves off buying vast amounts of gas from Russia, although the Russians have now found some very close friends of the Chinese who are very happy to buy their goods. So America potentially the really big beneficiary of this. I think if Trump wins, I think energy stocks will go to the moon.